Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I have a story for you before we turn to the various absurdities of the State of the Union last night, some elements of which were rather appalling, forceful delivery, but content very mixed, as I shall report. Meanwhile, this is a very, very important story to understand, because if America is nuked, this will be the principal reason why. So if you lose your future, you're going to know who to blame. Seymour Hersh, how America took out the Nord Stream pipeline. Biden's decision to sabotage the pipelines came after more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community. The U.S. Navy's diving and salvage center can be found in a location as obscure as its name, down what was once a country lane in rural Panama City, and now a booming resort city in the southwestern panhandle of Florida, 70 miles south of the Alabama border. One of my daughters has a condo there, coincidentally. The center's complex is as nondescript as its location, a drab concrete post-World War II structure that has the look of a vocational high school on the west side of Chicago. A coin-operated laundromat and a dance school are across what is now a four-lane road. The center has been training highly skilled deep water divers for decades who, once assigned to American military units worldwide, are capable of technical diving to do the good, using C4 explosives to clear harbors and beaches of debris and unexploded ordnance, as well as the bad, like blowing up foreign oil rigs, fouling intake valves for undersea power plants, destroying locks on crucial shipping canals. The Panama City Center, which boasts the second largest indoor pool in America, was a perfect place to recruit their best and most taciturn graduates at the diving school, who successfully did last summer what they had been authorized to do, 260 feet under the surface of the Baltic Sea. Last June, the Navy divers operating under the cover of a widely publicized midsummer NATO exercise known as Baltops 22, planted the remotely triggered explosives that 3 months later destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. Two of the pipelines, which were known collectively as Nord Stream 1, had been riding Germany and much of Western Europe with cheap Russian natural gas for more than a decade. A second pair of pipelines, called Nord Stream 2, had been built but were not yet operational. Now, with Russian troops massing on the Ukraine border and the bloodiest war in Europe since 1945 looming, President Joseph Biden saw the pipelines as a vehicle for Vladimir Putin to weaponize natural gas for his political and territorial ambitions. Let me say as an aside, the military-industrial complex was behind all of this. The natural pipe gas, cheap to Germany, was beneficial for both sides, providing Germany with an inexhaustible, inexpensive source of energy, providing Putin and Russia with income resources from Europe, mitigating tensions between them, where the apprehension by the military-industrial complex was that this was going to usher in a new era of cordial, commercial, peaceful relations between Russia and Germany especially, and thereby affect all the NATO nations, rendering NATO's obsolescence all too obvious. Why pay for, you know, massive sums for a defense entity when you're having cordial relation with a presumptive enemy? That would have been good for Europe. That would have been good for Russia. That would have been good for the entirety of planet Earth. But they had other ideas. As for comment, Adrienne Watson, a White House spokesperson, said in an email, "This is false and complete fiction." Tammy Thorpe, a spokesperson for the CIA, similarly wrote, "This claim is completely and utterly false." Biden's decision to sabotage the pipelines came after more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how to best achieve that goal. For much of the time, the issue was not whether to do the mission, but how to get it done with no overt clue as to who was responsible. There was a vital bureaucratic reason for relying on a graduate of the center's hardcore diving school in Panama City. The divers were Navy only and not members of America's Special Forces Command, whose covert operation must be reported to Congress and briefed in advance to the Senate and House leadership, the so-called Gang of Eight. The Biden admin was doing everything possible to avoid leaks as the planning took place late in 2021 and into the first months of 2022. President Biden and his foreign policy team, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Policy, had been vocal and consistent in their hostility to the two pipelines, which ran side by side for 750 miles under the Baltic Sea from two different ports in northeast Russia near the Estonia border, passing close to the Danish island of Bornholm before ending in northern Germany. The direct route, which bypassed any need to transit Ukraine, had been a boon for the German economy, which enjoyed an abundance of cheap Russian natural gas, enough to run its factories and heat its homes while enabling German distributors to sell excess gas at a profit throughout Western Europe. Action that could be traced to the administration would violate U.S. promises to minimize direct conflict with Russia. Secrecy was essential. From its earliest days, Nord Stream 1 was seen by Russia and its anti-Russian NATO partners as a threat to Western dominance. The holding company behind it, Nord Stream AG, was incorporated in Switzerland in 2005 in partnership with Gazprom, a publicly traded Russian company producing enormous profits for shareholders, which is dominated by oligarchs known to be in the thrall of Putin. Gazprom controlled 51% of the company, with four European energy firms, one in France, one in the Netherlands, and two in Germany, sharing the remaining 49% of stock, having the right to control downstream sales of the inexpensive natural gas to local distributors in Germany and Western Europe. Gazprom's profits were shared with the Russian government, and state gas and oil revenues were estimated in some years to amount to as much as 45% of Russia's annual budget. America's political fears were real. Putin would now have an additional and much-needed major source of income, and Germany and the rest of Europe would become addicted to the low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia while diminishing European reliance on America. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Many Germans saw Nord Stream 1 as part of the deliverance of former Chancellor Willy Brandt's fame, Ostpolitik theory, which would enable post-war Germany to rehabilitate itself and other European nations destroyed in World War II by, among other initiatives, utilizing cheap Russian gas to fuel a prosperous Western European market and trading economy. Nord Stream 1 was dangerous enough in the view of NATO and Washington, but Nord Stream 2, whose construction was completed in September of 2021, would, if approved by German regulators, double the amount of cheap gas that would be available to Germany and Western Europe. The second pipeline would also provide enough gas for more than 50% of Germany's annual consumption. Tensions were constantly escalating between Russia and NATO, backed by the aggressive foreign policy of the Biden administration. Opposition to Nord Stream 2 flared on the eve of the Biden administration in January 2021, when Senate Republicans, led by Ted Cruz of Texas, repeatedly raised a political threat of cheap Russian natural gas during the confirmation hearing of Blinken as Secretary of State. By then, a unified Senate had successfully passed a law that, as Cruz told Blinken, halted the pipeline in its tracks. There would be enormous political and economic pressure from the German government, then headed by Angela Merkel, to get the second pipeline online. Would Biden stand up to the Germans? Blinken said yes, but added that he had not discussed the specifics of the incoming president's view. I know his strong conviction that this is a bad idea, the Nord Stream 2, he said. I know that he would have us use every persuasive tool that we have to convince our friends and partners, including Germany, not to move forward with it. I mean, just think of the situation. Germany's going to benefit enormously from the cheap gas. It's going to be beneficial to Russia. It's going to reduce tensions between the European Union and Russia. Why would that not be a good thing? A few months later, as the construction of the second pipeline neared completion, Biden blinked. That May, in a stunning turnaround, the administration waived sanctions against Nord Stream AG, with a State Department official conceding that trying to stop the pipeline through sanctions and diplomacy had always been a long shot. Behind the scenes, administration official reportedly urged Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, by then facing a threat of a Russian invasion, not to criticize the move. There were immediate consequences. Senate Republicans, led by Cruz, announced an immediate blockade of all of Biden's foreign policy nominees and delayed passage of the annual defense bill for months, deep into fall. Politico later depicted Biden's turnabout on the second Russian pipeline as the one decision arguably more than the chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan that has periled Biden's agenda. The administration was floundering despite getting a reprieve on the crisis in mid-November when Germany's energy regulator suspended approval of the second Nord Stream pipeline. Natural gas prices surged 8% within days amidst growing fears in Germany and Europe that the pipeline suspension and the growing possibility of a war between Russia and Ukraine would lead to a very much unwanted cold winter. It was not clear to Washington just where Olaf Scholz, Germany's newly appointed chancellor, stood. Months earlier, after the fall of Afghanistan, Scholz had publicly endorsed French President Emmanuel Macron's call for a more autonomous European foreign policy in a speech in Prague, clearly suggesting less reliance on Washington and its mercurial actions. Throughout all of this, Russian troops have been steadily and ominously building up on the borders of Ukraine. And by the end of December, more than 100,000 soldiers were in position to strike from Belarus and Crimea. Alarm was growing in Washington, including an assessment from Blinken that those troop numbers could be doubled in short order. The administration's attention once again was focused on Nord Stream. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and weapons it needed to defeat Russia. It was at this unsettled moment that Biden authorized Jake Sullivan to bring together an interagency group to come up with a plan. All options were to be on the table, but only one would emerge. Planning. In December of 2021, 2 months before the first Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, Jake Sullivan convened a meeting of a newly formed task force, men and women from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA, and the State and Treasury Departments, and asked for a recommendation about how to respond to Putin's impending invasion. It would be the first of a series of top-secret meetings in a secure room on the top floor of the old executive office building adjacent to the White House. That was also the home of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. There was a usual back-and-forth chatter that eventually led to a crucial preliminary question. Would the recommendation forwarded by the group to the president be reversible, such as another layer of sanctions and currency restrictions, or irreversible, that is, kinetic actions which could not be undone? What became clear to participants, according to the source with direct knowledge of the process, is that Sullivan intended for the group to come up with a plan for the destruction of the two Nord Stream pipelines, and that he was delivering on the desires of the president. Over the next several meetings, the participants debated options for an attack. The Navy proposed using a newly commissioned submarine to assault the pipeline directly. The Air Force discussed dropping bombs with delayed fuses that could be set off remotely. The CIA argued that whatever was done, it would have to be covert. Everyone involved understood the stakes. This is not kiddie stuff, the source said. If the attacks were traceable to the United States, it's an act of war. At the time, the CIA was directed by William Burns, a mild-mannered former ambassador to Russia who had served as Deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration. Burns quickly authorized an agency working group whose ad hoc members included, by chance, someone who was familiar with the capabilities of the Navy's deep-sea divers in Panama City. Over the next few weeks, members of the CIA's working group began to craft a plan for a covert operation that would use deep-sea divers to trigger an explosion along the pipeline. Something like this had been done before. In 1971, the American intelligence community learned from still undisclosed sources that two important units of the Russian Navy were communicating via an undersea cable buried in the Sea of Okhotsk on Russia's far east coast. The cable linked a regional Navy command to the mainland headquarters in Vladivostok. A handpicked team of CIA and NSA operatives was assembled somewhere in the Washington area under deep cover and worked out a plan using Navy divers, modified submarines, and a deep submarine rescue vehicle that succeeded after much trial and error in locating the Russian cable. The divers planted a sophisticated listening device on the cable that successfully intercepted the Russian traffic and recorded it on a taping system. The NASA learned that senior Russian Navy officers, convinced of the security of their communication link, chatted away with their peers without encryption. The recording device and its tape had to be replaced monthly, and the project rolled on merrily for a decade until it was compromised by a 44-year-old civilian NSA technician named Ronald Pelton, who was fluent in Russian. Pelton was betrayed by a Russian defector in 1985 and sent to prison. He was paid just $5,000 by the Russians for his revelations about the operation, along with $35,000 for other Russian operational data he provided that was never made public. That underwater success, codenamed Ivy Bells, was innovative and risky and produced invaluable intelligence about the Russian Navy's intentions and planning. Still, the interagency group was initially skeptical of the CIA's enthusiasm for a covert deep-sea attack. There were too many unanswered questions. The waters of the Baltic were heavily patrolled by the Russian Navy, and there were no oil rigs that could be used as cover for a diving operation. Would the divers have to go to Estonia, right across the border from Russia's natural gas loading docks, to train for the mission? It would be a goat half, the agency was told. Throughout all this scheming, the source said, some working guys in the CIA and the State Department were saying, don't do this. It's stupid. It will be a political nightmare if it comes out. Nevertheless, in early 2022, the CIA working group reported back to Sullivan's interagency group, we have a way to blow up the pipelines. What came next was stunning. On February 7th, less than 3 weeks before the seemingly inevitable Russian invasion of Ukraine, Biden met in his White House office with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who, after some wobbling, was now firmly on the Russian team. At the press briefing that followed, Biden defiantly said, if Russia invades, there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. 20 days earlier, Undersecretary Nuland had delivered essentially the same message at a State Department briefing with little press coverage. I want to be very clear to you today, she said in response to a question. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward. Several of those involved in planning the pipeline mission were dismayed by what they viewed as indirect references to the attack. It was like putting an atomic bomb on the ground in Tokyo and telling the Japanese that we are going to detonate it, the source said. The plan was for the options to be executed post-invasion and not advertised publicly. Biden simply didn't get it or ignored it. Biden and Nuland's indiscretion, if that is what it was, might have frustrated some of the planners, but it also created an opportunity. According to the source, some of the senior officials of the CIA determined that blowing up the pipeline no longer could be considered a covert option because the president just announced that we knew how to do it. The plan to blow up Nord Stream 1 and 2 was suddenly downgraded from a covert operation requiring that Congress be informed to one that was deemed as a highly classified intelligence operation with U.S. military support. Under the law, the source explained, there was no longer a legal requirement to report the operation to Congress. All they had to do now is just do it, but it still had to be secret. The Russians have superlative surveillance of the Baltic Sea. The agency working group members had no direct contact with the White House and were eager to find out if the president meant what he'd said, that is, if the mission was now a go. The source recalled, Bill Burns comes back and says, do it. That's only half the story. This is so important. But the United States was an act of war. But the United States was also a violation of international law, of the laws of warfare. You are not allowed to attack your enemy's infrastructure because of the effects it'll have on the civilian population. That is a war crime of which the United States stands convicted. The eyes of the public are going to view the United States very differently from here on out. And you have to understand, we have unscrupulous leaders in the White House who are willing to undertake any operation that they believe is going to harm Russia and benefit the United States, no matter what the consequences, in this case for the European community, for Germany in particular, where the situation is just ghastly for them.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Seymour Hersh, it appears to me, is hereby establishing himself once again as among our premier investigative journalists, of whom there are very, very few. The operation. Norway was a perfect place to base the mission. In the past few years of East-West crisis, the U.S. military has vastly expanded its presence inside Norway, whose western border runs 1,400 miles along the North Atlantic and merges above the Arctic Circle with Russia. The Pentagon has created high-paying jobs and contracts amid some local controversy by investing hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and expand American Navy and Air Force facilities in Norway. The new works included, most importantly, an advanced synthetic aperture radar far up north that was capable of penetrating deep into Russia and came online just as the American intelligence community lost access to a series of long-range listening sites inside China. A newly repurposed American submarine base, which had been under construction for years, had become operational. And more American submarines were now able to work closely with their Norwegian colleagues to monitor and spy on a major Russian nuclear redoubt 250 miles to the east on the Kola Peninsula. America also has vastly expanded a Norwegian air base in the north and delivered to the Norwegian Air Force a fleet of Boeing-built P-8 Poseidon patrol planes to bolster its long-range spying on all things Russia. In return, The Norwegian government angered liberals and some moderates in its parliament last November by passing the Supplementary Defense Cooperation Agreement. Under the New Deal, the U.S. legal system would have jurisdiction in certain agreed areas in the North over American soldiers accused of crimes off base, as well as over those Norwegian citizens accused or suspected of interfering with the work at the base. Norway was one of the original signatories of the NATO Treaty in 1949 in the early days of the Cold War. Today, the Supreme Commander of NATO is Jens Stoltenberg, a committed anti-communist who served as Norway's prime minister for 8 years before moving to his high NATO post with American backing in 2014. Notice that's the same year that Victoria Nuland engineered a coup in Kiev and took out the Russia-friendly prime minister and installed a Western puppet of whom Zelensky is the successor. He was a hardliner on all things Putin and Russia, who had cooperated with the American intelligence community since the Vietnam War. He has been trusted completely since. He is the glove that fits the American hand, the source said. Back in Washington, planners knew they had to go to Norway. They hated the Russians, and the Norwegian Navy was full of superb sailors and divers who had generations of experience in highly profitable deep-sea oil and gas exploration, this source said. They could also be trusted to keep the mission secret. The Norwegians may have had other interests as well, he adds. The destruction of Nord Stream, if the Americans could pull it off, would allow Norway to sell vastly more of its own natural gas to Europe. Sometime in March, a few members of the team flew to Norway to meet with the Norwegian Secret Service and Navy. One of the key questions was, where exactly in the Baltic Sea was the best place to plant the explosives? Nord Stream 1 and 2, each with two sets of pipelines, were separated much of the way by little more than a mile as they made their run to the port of Greifswald in the far northeast of Germany. The Norwegian Navy was quick to find the right spot in the shallow waters of the Baltic Sea, a few miles off Denmark's Bornholm Island. The pipelines ran more than a mile apart along the seafloor, but was only 260 feet deep. That would be well within the range of the divers who, operating from a Norwegian Alta-class mine hunter, would dive with a mixture of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium streaming from their tanks and plant-shaped C4 charges on the four pipelines with concrete protective covers. It would be tedious, time-consuming, and dangerous work, but the waters off Bornholm had another advantage. There were no major tidal currents, which would have made the task of diving much more difficult. After a bit of research, the Americans were all in. At this point, the Navy's obscure deep diving group in Panama City once again came into play. The deep sea schools at Panama City, whose trainees participated in Ivy Bells, are seen as an unwanted backwater by the elite graduates of the Naval Academy in Annapolis, who typically seek the glory of being assigned as a SEAL, fighter pilot, or submariner if one must become a black shoe, that is, a member of the less desirable surface ship command. There is always at least duty on a destroyer, cruiser, or amphibious ship. The least glamorous of all is mine warfare. Its divers never appear in Hollywood movies or on the cover of popular magazines. The best divers with deep diving qualifications are a tight community, and only the very best are recruited for the operation and told to be prepared to be summoned to the CIA in Washington, the source said. The Norwegians and Americans had a location in the operative, but there was another concern. Any unusual underwater activity in the waters off of Bornholm might draw the attention of Swedish or Danish navies, which could report it. Denmark had also been one of the original NATO signatories and was known in the intelligence community for its special ties to the United Kingdom. Sweden had applied for membership into NATO and had demonstrated its great skill in managing its underwater sound and magnetic sensor systems that successfully tracked Russian submarines that would occasionally show up in remote waters of the Swedish archipelago and be forced to the surface. The Norwegians joined the Americans in insisting that some senior officials in Denmark and Sweden had to be briefed in general terms about possible diving activity in the area. In that way, someone higher up could intervene and keep a report out of the chain of command, thus insulating the pipeline operation. What they were told and what they knew were purposefully different, the source said. The Norwegian embassy asked a comment on the story, did not respond. Surprise, surprise. The Norwegians were key to solving other hurdles. The Russian Navy was known to possess surveillance technology capable of spotting and triggering underwater mines. The American explosive devices needed to be camouflaged in a way that would make them appear to the Russian system as part of the natural background, something that required adapting to the specific salinity of the water. The Norwegians had a fix. They also had a solution to the crucial question of when the operation should take place. Every June, for the past 21 years, the American Sixth Fleet, whose flagship is based in Gaeta, Italy, south of Rome, had sponsored a major NATO exercise in the Baltic Sea involving scores of Allied ships throughout the region. The current exercise, held in June, would be known as Baltic Operation 22 or BALTOPS 22. The Norwegians proposed this would be the ideal cover to plant the mines. The Americans provided one vital element. They convinced the Deep Sixth Fleet planners to add a research and development exercise to the program. The exercise, as made public by the Navy, involved the Sixth Fleet in collaboration with the Navy's research and warfare centers. The ATSEAC event would be held off the coast of Bornholm Island and involved NATO teams of divers planting mines with competing teams using the latest underwater technology to find and destroy them. It was both a useful exercise and an ingenious cover. The Panama City boys would do their thing, and the C4 explosive would be in place by the end of BALTOPS 22, with a 48-hour timer attached. All of the Americans and Norwegians would be long gone by the first explosions. The days were counting down. The clock was ticking, and we were nearing mission accomplished. And then Washington had second thoughts. The bombs would still be planted during BALTOPS, but the White House worried that a two-day window for their detonation would be too close to the end of the exercise, and it would be obvious that America had been involved. Instead, the White House had a new request. Can the guys in the field come up with some way to blow the pipelines later on command? Some members of the planning team were angered and frustrated by the president's seeming indecision. The Panama City divers had repeatedly practiced playing the C4 on pipelines, as they would during BALTOPS. But now the team in Norway had to come up with a way to give Biden what he wanted, the ability to issue a successful execution order at a time of his choosing. Being tasked with an arbitrary last-minute change was something the CIA was accustomed to managing, but it also renewed its concern some shared over the necessity and legality of the entire enterprise. The president's secret orders also evoked the CIA's dilemma in the Vietnam War days when President Johnson, confronted by growing anti-Vietnam War sentiment, ordered the agency to violate its charter, which specifically barred it from operate inside America by spying on anti-war leaders to determine whether they were being controlled by communist Russia. The agency ultimately acquiesced. And throughout the 1970s, it became clear just how far it had been willing to go. There were subsequent newspaper revelations in the aftermath of the Watergate scandal about the agency spying on American citizens, its involvement in the assassination of foreign leaders, and its undermine of the socialist government of Salvador Allende in Chile. Those revelations led to a dramatic series of hearings in the mid-1970s in the Senate, led by Frank Church of Idaho, that made it clear that Richard Helms, the agency director at the time, accepted that he had an obligation to do what the president wanted, even if it meant violating the law. As an aside, while I was an undergraduate at Princeton, the WCLEO, a political debating organization of which I was a member, featured Frank Church, and I had the opportunity to shake his hand. In unpublished closed-door testimony, Helms ruefully explained that you almost have an immaculate conception when you do something under secret orders from a president, whether it's right that you should have it or wrong that you should have it. The CIA works under different rules and ground rules than any other part of the government. He was essentially telling the senators that as head of the CIA, understood that he'd been working for the crown and not the Constitution. The Americans that work in Norway operated under the same dynamic and dutifully began working on the new problem, how to remotely detonate the C4 explosives on Biden's order. It was a much more demanding assignment than those in Washington understood. There was no way for the team in Norway to know when the president might push the button. Would it be in a few weeks, in many months, or in half a year or longer? The C4 attached to the pipeline would be triggered by a sonar buoy dropped by a plane on short notice. But the procedure involved the most advanced signal processing technology. Once in place, the delayed timing devices attached to any of the four pipelines could be accidentally triggered by the complex mix of ocean background noises throughout the heavily trafficked Baltic Sea from near and distant ships, underwater drilling, seismic events, waves, and even sea creatures. To avoid this, the sonar buoy, once in place, would emit a sequence of unique low-frequency tonal sounds, much like those emitted by a flute or a piano, that would be recognized by the timing device and, after a preset hours of delay, trigger the explosives. You want a signal that is robust enough so that no other signal could accidentally send a pulse that detonated the explosives, I was told by Dr. Theodore Postol, Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology, and National Security Policy at MIT. Postol has served as a science advisor to the Pentagon Chief of Naval Operations, said the issue facing the group in Norway, because of Biden's delay, was one of chance. The longer the explosives are in the water, the greater the risk there would be a random signal that would launch the bombs. On September 26, 2022, our Norwegian Navy P-8 surveillance plane made a seemingly routine flight and dropped a sonar buoy. The signal spread underwater, initially to Nord Stream 2 and then to Nord Stream 1. A few hours later, the high-powered C4 explosive were triggered, and three of the four pipelines were put out of commission. Within a few minutes, pools of methane gas that remained in the shuttered pipelines could be seen spreading on the water's surface, and the world learned that something irreversible had taken place. Fallout. In the immediate aftermath of the pipeline bombing, the American media treated it like an unsolved mystery. Russia was repeatedly cited as the likely culprit, spurred on by calculated leaks from the White House, without ever establishing a clear motive for such an act of self-sabotage beyond simple retribution. A few months later, when it emerged that Russian authorities had been quietly getting estimates for the cost to repair the pipeline, the New York Times described the news as complicating theories about who was behind the attack. No major American newspaper dug into the earlier threats to the pipelines made by Biden and Undersecretary of State Nuland. What was never clear why Russia would seek to destroy its own lucrative pipeline. A more telling rationale for the president's action came from Secretary of State Blinken. Asked at a press conference last September about the consequences of the worsening energy crisis in Western Europe, Blinken described the moment as a potentially good one. It's a tremendous opportunity to once and for all remove the dependence on Russian energy and thus a takeaway from Vladimir Putin, the weaponization of energy as a means of advancing his imperial designs. That's very significant, and that offers strategic, tremendous strategic opportunity for the years to come. But meanwhile, we're determined to do everything we possibly can to make sure the consequences of all of this are not borne by citizens in our countries or, for that matter, around the world. Fat chance. More recently, Victoria Nuland expressed satisfaction at the demise of the newest of the pipelines, testifying at a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing in late January. She told Senator Ted Cruz, "Like you, I am, and I think the administration is, very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea." The source had a much more streetwise view of Biden's decision to sabotage more than 1,500 miles of Gazprom pipeline as winter approached. "Well," he said, "speaking of the president, I got to admit the guy has a pair of balls. He said he was going to do it, and he did." Asked why he thought the Russian failed to respond, he said cynically, "Maybe they want the capability to do the same thing the U.S. did." "It was a beautiful cover story," he went on. "Behind it was a covert operation to place experts in the field and equipment and operated on a covert signal. The only flaw was a decision to do it." I couldn't agree more. This is a gross violation of international law. This is a violation of the world's rules of warfare, which are not to destroy infrastructure in any nation because it had vast consequences for the civilian population. It's against the rules of war to target civilian populations. And now what have we done? We have left the United States completely open to attacks upon our infrastructure. These were illustrated most recently by the threat from the balloon attributed to China passing over the continental United States. There were all kinds of reasons to be concerned. It could, for example, have been loaded with a low-yield nuclear device that would set off EMPs that would take out the electric grid across the United States. Just think, if you did not have access to any equipment or appliances of yours that run on electricity, that would obviously include your computers, your television, no access to the internet, it would all be shut down. That could have happened. A friend of mine who knows a great deal in this area of technology told me he was so alarmed he was going to go out and purchase wood-burning stoves that convert that fuel into electricity, and he urged me to buy one too. He is a very sophisticated guy. He pointed out the altitude was just perfect for an EMP. He observed that it cannot be done from the higher atmosphere because the blast is dissipated, but from the altitude, 50,000, 60,000 feet, it would be perfect. So why didn't the U.S. military shoot it down when it was over the Aleutian Islands or over Alaska? We got the absurd claim because it might have damaged civilians on the ground. But how many would it have taken out? 10, 12, 100? What's that versus a security of 330 Americans? This is absurd. There's no cost-benefit analysis that allows that. Or, as I suggested, based on observation from a friend, since our missile systems have microprocessor chips that were made in China that almost certainly have a back door, it could be that as this balloon floated across the United States, it was neutralizing our ICBMs and leaving the United States with no nuclear retaliatory capacity. How about that? But the Chiefs didn't do it. Why not? The only plausible explanation I've got is that this was a wag the dog. This was a DOD operation. They wanted to spy on militias in Idaho, Montana, and elsewhere. Now, this was just dirty dealing by our own Department of Defense. And by the way, the latest reports I'm getting are that the DOD had a role to play in developing the vax that would be used to massacre what's going to turn out to be millions, even hundreds of millions of Americans. Remember, in the past, I reported on Deagle.com had projected that between 20 and 2025, the U.S. population would drop from 335 million to, hold your breath, 65 million. Where'd all those people go? Deagle was projecting they'd all be dead. And one further thought. This is a tremendous opportunity once and all to remove dependence on Russian energy and take away from Vladimir Putin the weaponization of energy as a means of advancing his imperial designs. What imperial designs? Weaponizing energy? Engaging in commercial transactions with the European Union, with Germany, to provide them with cheap gas so that they can earn the profits into Russia? That's called business. That's not the weaponization of energy. That's called business. And here you have Anthony Blinken shoveling this shit. Unbelievable.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change.
time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we had a State of the Union address last night by a fake guy who was a product of a stolen election, who in the past frequently speaks from a fake Oval Office in the Eisenhower administration building, where it's replete with an audience sitting there. All the reporters know it's fake. It's got a giant teleprompter. I mean, it's set up like a theater, and it's all phony, and you don't hear a damn word about it about the American press. Here's a report. Seemed to me fairly sympathetic to the speaker. We'll get deeper into this. America's democracy is unbowed and unbroken, says Biden in State of Union address. 2 years after Capitol attack, President sets out to offer reassuring message, urges Republicans to work together to rebuild economy, restore the soul of the nation. Washington Associated Press. U.S. President Joe Biden called on Republicans in his State of the Union address Tuesday night to work with him to finish the job of rebuilding the economy and uniting the nation as he sought to overcome pessimism in the country and navigate political divisions in Washington. Think about it, you know, pondering what were going to be the policy victories that Biden's had that he would tout last night. Canceling the XL pipeline and vitiating permits to drill on federal land. That was his first act in office. Destroying our energy independence, draining the strategic petroleum reserve to artificially keep down the price of gas before the midterm, allowing millions of migrants to flood our border, creating chaos in the United States. This is going to permanently alter the demographics of America, sending massive volumes of weapons and money, endless amounts of money to Ukraine, the most corrupt nation in Europe. and extolling its leader, who's a comedian who plays the piano with his penis, as a hero for democracy and freedom, when he's using the Azov Battalion to slaughter civilians just because they speak Russian or they're sympathetic to Russia. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy has been a disaster. This is, in my judgment, the worst president in the history of the United States, and it's not even the real guy. In fact, that, I think, was the idea. Nobody wanted to be responsible for being the president who destroyed America. So they got a fictional entity here. This guy is not Joe Biden. Today I discovered a blog I'd prepared way back when that I had somehow overlooked publishing about the massive evidence that this is not the real guy. And you can find it on my blog at jameshfetzer.org, where you can also find Seymour Hersh's important study. I mean, this is pathbreaking. Remember, when the nukes go off in that millisecond before you're turned into ash, you can thank the fake Joe Biden, the real Jack Sullivan, the real Anthony Blinken, the real Victoria Nuland, for the nuclear destruction of the United States. Because Russia has the right to react to an act of war. In destroying the Nord Stream pipeline, which were commercial business entities in transaction between Germany and Russia, was an act of war. And they're now entitled to destroy our infrastructure by reciprocation. I mean, I cannot imagine a more stupid thing to have done. I just say this as a former Marine Corps officer who cares about my country. I was glad to serve. But this is going to have us die for no good reason whatsoever. To prop up a corrupt country? And bear in mind, in the background, the really crucial issue: Israel wants Ukraine to be the new Israel. Most of the occupants of Israel are not descendants of the tribe of Judah. They are Ashkenazi Jews. They come from the region of Ukraine that has provided those occupants that they want to return. This is just stunning. It's also the case, by the way, that Jacob Rothschild, the head of the Rothschild banking empire that's motivating most of what goes on behind the scene worldwide, which owns some 80% of the world's wealth but wants to make it 100, has declared that Vladimir Putin is an enemy of the New World Order and that the New World Order cannot move forward without Ukraine. So bear that in mind, in my judgment. Vladimir Putin is carrying the flag and fighting the fight for humanity, not just for Russia. And bear in mind, Putin made it very clear what was concerned to him. He even agreed to the Minsk agreements that, had they been followed through, would have precluded any intervention militarily by Russia. That the Donbass region was going to become independent, that there'd be respect for the republics of Luhansk and Donetsk, that the referendum that returned Crimea to Russia would be respected. But Angela Merkel let the cat out of the bag that it was all just nonsense. It was just to buy time to arm Ukraine to the teeth for a Russian intrusion. So we are the liars, we are the phonies, we are the frauds. We are the bloody aggressors with regard to this pipeline thing, an act of war by the United States against Russia. And mark my words, we're going to pay for it. We are going to pay for it. And it's because we have a completely dysfunctional fake president in office. Look at the images I provided there in that blog. I've also posted on my Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. You need to review the bidding here, because if you got any doubt about it, believe me, there's no room for doubt. More about the State of the Union. The backdrop of the annual address was markedly different from the previous 2 years, with a Republican speaker sitting behind Biden and GOP lawmakers in the audience, preparing to scrutinize both his administration and his policy. He sought to reassure the nation that his stewardship of the country has delivered results both at home and abroad. And he also set out to prove his fitness for a likely re-election bid. I don't think there's any chance of that. The challenges for Biden are mainly economic uncertainty, a wearing war in Ukraine, growing tension with China, and more. And signs of the past drama at the Capitol, most notably the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol, were unavoidable. With a large fence encircling the complex, as lawmakers and those in attendance faced tighter than usual security measures. The president took to the House rostrum at a time when just a quarter of U.S. adults say things in the country are headed in the right direction. According to a new poll by the Associated Press Newark Center for Public Affairs Research. That, by the way, was also the case before the midterms, where in the past that question, is the country heading in the right direction, has been a reliable indicator of how a midterm election would go, but not this time. They were able to steal the midterm just as successfully as they stole the 2020. James Carville implicitly acknowledged stealing 57 seats in the House, and I have no doubt two or three in the Senate, to preserve Democrat control. It is grotesque. Remember, the motto of Dominion is changing the way you vote. And what they mean by that is from Republican to Democrat. They change the way you vote, all right. They use technology to steal the elections. They know the truth of Stalin's observation. It doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them. These machines can print their own ballots. These machines have ways of putting vast numbers of ballots into adjudication, which means an independent person looks at how they should be counted with no supervision or accountability whatsoever, and can change every damn one that was for the Republicans to the Democrats. I mean, it's virtually foolproof, because when it's all over, the tabulated numbers add up. The machines manufacture numbers that, if you tabulate them, correspond to what they give out as the official account, even though there's been massive theft. This is why Carrie Lake has encountered trouble in Arizona, though she's not been treated fairly by the court system there any more than I have been treated fairly by the court system in Wisconsin. It's just absurd. About three quarters are saying things are on the wrong track, and the majority of Democrats don't want Biden to seek another term. He sought to confront those sentiments head on. You wonder whether a path even exists anymore for you and your children to get ahead without moving away. I get it, Biden said. That's why we're building an economy where no one is left behind. Jobs are coming back. Pride is coming back. Because of the choices we made in the last 2 years. What the hell is he talking about? Gay pride? Is that what he's talking about? Pride is coming back? There's nothing to be proud of in the United States today. Nothing. Not a damn thing. And I have been unable to think of a single policy Biden has implemented that has done the American people any good whatsoever. Every action he's taken has been harmful and destructive. I can't even find any that are neutral. And when he claims jobs are coming back, do you know, before the midterm? He claimed that his administration had created 1.1 million new jobs. That's what they said. That's what they publicized. The actual number? A paltry 10,000. 10,000 becomes escalated, translated into 1.1 million. You cannot believe a goddamn thing coming from this administration. You cannot believe it. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who is seated behind Biden, urged his conference to be respectful ahead of Biden's address and in turn asked Biden to refrain from using the phrase extreme mega Republicans, which the president deployed on the campaign trail in 2022. I won't tear up the speech. I won't play games, McCarthy told reporters. Reverent to Pelosi's dramatic action after President Donald Trump's final State of the Union address, which, by the way, was quite superb and touted many bona fide accomplishments under Trump. Biden was shifting his sights after spending his first 2 years pushing through major bills, such as the bipartisan infrastructure package, legislation to promote high-tech manufacturing and climate measures. With Republicans now in control of the House, he is turning his focus to implementing those massive laws and making sure voters credit him for the improvements. Well, I don't think we're going to see any improvements. I don't think we will see any at all. Meanwhile, get this. Poll. Just 39% say State of the Union is strong, down 16 points since 2018. Just 39% of American adults believe the State of the Union is strong before Joe Biden likely declaring it so during Tuesday's State of the Union. This was published a day before. According to Monmouth polling from Monday, less than 4 in 10 Americans say the State of the Union is strong, while 58% say it is not strong. Among those who doubt the nation's strength, 32% say the Union is not too strong, 26% deem it not at all strong, just 7% claim it is very strong, 32% allege it is somewhat strong. The nation has weathered difficult times under Biden's leadership. More than 2 million migrants were apprehended at the southern border. Fentanyl became the greatest killer among 18 to 45-year-olds. Inflation soared to a 40-year high. Gas prices increased to all-time record highs. Weekly wages shrank. Supply chain woes persisted. And the deadly Afghan withdrawal deeply embarrassed the nation. So what's Biden got to talk about? What's he got to boast about? What are the wins that he can claim? Breitbart talked about the first State of the Union. The State of the Union, Biden bumbles, coughs through first State of the Union. That did not happen last night. The delivery, I thought, was, for the most part, pretty strong, though Brett Hume, in comments about the speech, said he stumbled verbally many times, left out words and the like, and I suspect Brett was following a transcript, a written version of the speech he was delivering as he was presenting it. According to the poll, Americans have soured on the State of the Union since 2018, when former President Donald Trump was in office. 55% in 2018 said the Union was somewhat strong, compared to Biden's 39%. Independent voters are the main driver of the decreasing poll numbers. The survey found that independents' opinion of the strength of the Union has dropped more steadily, from 52% in 2018, briefly plateauing at 44% in 2019 and 46% in 2022, then dropping to 33% in the current poll. The survey also revealed that only 24% of Americans believe the nation is headed in the right direction. 73% say it's going in the wrong. only 41% of Democrats, 6% of Republicans, and 22% of independents believe the nation is headed in the right direction. And as I say, if you take a look at my blog regarding the original Joe Biden and the double Joe Biden, they're not at all the same. They're not at all the same. Different ears, different shape and size of skull, different expressive. Joe Biden, the real guy, had a very expressive face. This guy, not so much. And as I have mentioned before, when I was doing a lot of research on this, I looked at the body language, and it turned out that the way Jill responded to Joe was remarkably different from the way that she responds to his double. She'd always be beaming when she was with Joe, arm in arm, hand in hand. Joe would have this shit-eating smile on his face. He loves to talk, by the way. He's actually pretty articulate, unlike this guy, this double. And for further confirmation, a pharmacist who has to compare signatures to make sure he's not dispensing drugs illegally observed that they have completely different signatures. They're just not the same guy. And mind you, every Democrat, every political leader in the United States knows this is not the same guy. Are you kidding me? Joe Biden's been around Washington forever. Get this. Watch. Biden repeatedly heckled during State of the Union speech, argues with Republicans in wild display. From a political insider. President Biden delivered his State of the Union address Tuesday night and was met with repeated heckling by Republican lawmakers willing to call out what they deemed as falsehoods. It was a wild scene throughout, as some on the GOP side were willing to step up and blast the president mid-speech over his statements. At one point, Biden repeated a claim that Republicans were seeking to sunset Medicare and Social Security, something GOP leadership has repeatedly insisted is false. Some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset, Biden claimed, as shouts of protest emanated from the crowd. I groaned when I heard him say this. Just rubbish coming from decades-old claims by Democrats attacking Republicans. It's stale. It's false. It had no place here. I'm not saying it's a majority, he said, as boos rained down, and Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene could be heard shouting, liar. I'm glad to see. No, I tell you, I enjoy conversion, Biden awkwardly replied. He then tried to backtrack after being called out for the lie. I'm not saying it's a majority of you. I don't even think it's even as significant. But it's being proposed by individuals. I'm politely not naming them, but it's being proposed by some of you. Here's Greg Price tweeting. Absolute chaos in the chamber when Biden accuses Republicans of wanting to get rid of Medicare and Social Security. Truly, this is scraping the bottom of the political barrel. Biden's State of the Union turns into chaos. Gone are the days when a president would explain during a State of the Union speech why the nation is better for having him as president. Instead, you have Biden standing up and making essentially a campaign speech, calling out his political opponents and lying about their platforms. And the chaos continued, a metaphor for the entire Biden presidency. At one point, Biden mentioned victims of fentanyl, once again eliciting a response from his detractors. Fentanyl is killing more than 70,000 Americans a year, he said. It's coming from China, one member, possibly Green, shouted, while two others in attendance helpfully pointed out to Biden, it's your fault. Here we have townhall.com tweeting, Biden, fentanyl is killing more than 70,000 Americans a year from the crowd. It's your fault. Others pointed out that the solution to stopping the flow of fentanyl is to shut down the southern border. Close the border, some shouted. Biden replied, you got it. Here's Act for America tweeting, Joe Biden, fentanyl is killing more than 70,000 Americans a year. Close the border. Elsewhere, in his State of the Union speech, President Biden repeated the incredibly misleading claim that he's created 12 million jobs in 2 years. The Bureau of Labor Statistics indicates just 2.7 million jobs have been created under Biden, while the rest are essentially replacement for those lost during the pandemic. He also called for a ban on assault weapons, though he is unwilling to define such a weapon or even if he knew what would constitute one. Ban assault weapons now. Ban them now once and for all, he said, to cheers on the Democrat side and head shaking from the GOP. First Lady's Kiss. In another odd display from the State of the Union address, First Lady Jill Biden was seen kissing First Gentleman Doug Emhoff, sparking a viral moment as the two appeared to land on each other's lips. The Daily Mail described the moment as Mrs. Biden giving Vice President Kamala Harris' husband a very warm greeting. Colin Rugg tweets, Jill Biden just kissed Kamala Harris's husband on the lips. Didn't see that one coming. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy had, prior to the State of the Union, said he would not engage in theatrics because he respects the other side. His comments came following calls from some conservatives to tear up Biden's speech in the same manner his predecessor had of Trump's. But some GOP lawmakers were willing to go there, prompting McCarthy to try shushing them on a couple of occasions.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Just to tie off the discussion of the State of the Union, it makes for quite a visual to see McCarthy trying to shush Green when the two formed an alliance to get him that seat behind President Biden. McCarthy, meanwhile, was spotted having a friendly chat with Harris prior to the speech. Here's Hannah Brandt tweeting, something you don't see every day. Vice President Harris and Speaker McCarthy laughing together during a pre-State of the Union conversation. Reminder, both lawmakers are from California. While Biden's speech was enough to put most viewers asleep, those who watched were certainly not lacking in entertainment, thanks to the Republicans who spoke up. I'm going to open the lines to callers, 540-352-4452. You're welcome to call in and share your thoughts about any of the above. I thought Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the newly elected governor of Arkansas, did a very fine job. It was clear, it was well organized, it packed a lot of punch, and it was concise. I thought she did a commendable job, and I think that if there were legitimate voting taking place in the United States, there wouldn't be any question whatsoever about having a Biden administration in office. It's a joke. Not only is the man himself an imposter, my best guess is the real guy died in 2017, and they've been shuffling body doubles, and even some are wearing a latex mask. When some TV shots, you can see where it ends, you know, low down on his neck, but you can see the jagged edge from the latex mask. I mean, they're going all out with this fraud. Everything about it is fake. And just think, every damn member of the Democrat Party knows this is not the real Joe Biden, and I don't understand why the Republicans aren't calling him out, except that you're in the preposterous situation having this guy in office, that if you got rid of him, you'd bring up the brainless Kamala Harris. I've seen a number of people talk about her, and they all preface by saying she's intelligent. She isn't intelligent. She's a complete moron. She's an airhead. Why would anyone describe Kamala Harris as intelligent? She's brainless, completely brainless. And it's utterly insulting that she's in this position, this high office in the United States. Again, I reiterate, I invite your calls, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Mitchell, you noted just as I was coming on and about to address what we had here from Seymour Hersh. I like your thoughts. It seemed to me he really has reaffirmed his status as, if not the, certainly among the premier investigative journalists in the United States today. Your thoughts, Mitchell?
Oh, I actually think he has, Jim. But first, I'd like to qualify that I haven't been sniffed by Joe Biden personally enough to know if he's a body double or not. Just wanted to say. But anyway, yeah, it is quite alarming. You know, it's what we all really, what we all suspected all along. You know, it was basically, you know, a U.S., a U.K. or whatever military operation. And that, you know, this is, as you said, you know, if you're going to point to, I like to point back to 2014, the 2014 when we overthrew Ukraine. I like to point that as the start of World War III. But, you know, certainly the bombing of this Russian infrastructure project is can be labeled the first direct, known direct action against the Russian Federation.
I of course, agree completely. And how can anyone have doubt that Russia will, at a suitable time and place, respond? They cannot fail to do this. This was an egregious act against Russia, destroying their infrastructure and bona fide commercial transactions. I just am astonished the United States went ahead and did this, knowing full well that it was an act of war and that it was a violation of international law.
Absolutely.
And that if it were to be exposed, the United States would be very condemned by the world's going to catch on to this. I mean, it's outrageous, Mitchell.
Well, if you're not our friend, we'll beat you upside the head. But if you're a friend, you'll be dead. So take your pick. I forget who said somebody. That was a quote somebody said. So
that's a hell of a choice. A hell of a choice.
Hey, Brian's on with us.
Okay, Brian, join the conversation.
I just wanted to console Mitchell that, you know, Joe Biden hasn't sniffed him, and I know he's hurt by that, and I just want to make him feel a little better. Anyway, now what I wanted to say is, you know, I don't listen to any of this Democrat, Republican stuff anymore because they control it all. I mean, they control the Democrats, the leaders of the Republican Party are Jewish. They control all the voting machines. They control, you know, all of the judiciary, and the COVID thing proves they have that control everywhere in the world. So there's nothing more annoying to me than when I'm on the internet and I see someone say, Marjorie Taylor Greene really slammed AOC. She really let her have it. It just irritates me because I know it's just all part of their kabuki theater. It's just meaningless. They just do that to keep us going with this game, but they control everything. So that's how I look at it. I go back to that Otto Kahn, who was the head of Kuhn Loeb, and he was part of the Rothschild cabal, and he was giving an interview to the ambassador to England from France, Ariere, and he said, "Look, we always control both sides. We always control everything. So never think that, you know, the side of the capitalists is against the communists because we control it all." And you look at it today, and that's certainly true. So that's what I had to say.
Well, Brian, you're not the first to offer those claims about the uniparty, that there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. And yet, look at the difference with the Trump administration and the Biden. Trump had secure borders. He had us energy independent. He had a thriving economy. He kept us out of wars. How can you say there's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans when the Trump admin was doing so much good for the country and Biden so much harm?
Well, long term, what would have happened? I mean, he was still getting that stuff in there that shows he wasn't totally with us, with everything he did for Israel, the vaccination, you know, not fighting harder when he lost the election. He should have had his people challenge everything. So to me, it just shows. I mean, and the Republicans, nothing really happens with them. Everything just keeps marching on with this stupid stuff that we have to deal with, and it never really changes, okay? It's just obvious.
So, Brian, why are they working so hard to keep Trump out of office? Why two impeachment attempts, January 6th, releasing his tax returns, trying to find criminal issues? Why, if he's on their side, why would they even bother? Why not go with the flow? Trump's tremendously popular. They're going to have exactly the same outcomes, according to your account. Why put up a fight?
Well, to keep the game going, okay? They have to make it look like they're really, you know, against them, whatever. It goes back to what Russ Witter talked about, the egregore. The egregore, in order to keep it going, people have to believe in it. They have to believe this bullshit. And if everyone didn't believe it, it would collapse. So they will, you know, they will concede at times, but that's what's going on.
Brian, my frank opinion is Trump just destroyed the traditional view of the establishment running both parties. He destroyed it. He executed a hostile takeover. He turned the Republican Party into a populist party. He's had a grip on the American people who believe in him unlike any other politician in my lifetime. That includes JFK. So I just got to tell you, based on my considered opinion, you are wrong. I don't think that's right. And I think any living American here would prefer to go back to the good old days of Donald Trump to more of Biden. But by your account, there's no real difference, which I find very hard to swallow.
Well, I wish Paul was there. Paul would be defending me.
Well, but I'd say anyway, the same thing. I have said the same thing to Paul. It's not the first time you're hearing me explain these things. Mitchell, why don't you join here and give us your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we live in this political psyop. And, you know, it is like the Matrix, you know, if you think about it in the broader sense of how we were born into this. And it developed, or we developed around it and in us. So it's very hard to get out of this, the pattern of thinking that many people have gotten, we've gotten kind of stuck in. I don't think we can apply any hard and fast rules on anything today, just because of the asymmetrical warfare that's run, you know, by the deep state, you know, through dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of different think tanks and organizations and nonprofits and NGOs. And, you know, it's literally every way you try to turn, you can get stopped. The only way is to bring out the truth, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. So
let's just take one specific issue, the border. Trump locked down the border, built up a wall. It reduced to a trickle. He actually had control of the border. Among the consequences, the lowest working wage earner was seeing his wages rise at the highest rate because of locking down the border. You didn't have this flood of cheap labor stealing jobs out from under those who held them. It seemed to me right there, cut and dry, that's decisive evidence. There's a major difference between Trump's version of republicanism and Biden's version of the Democrat Party. I just don't see how that can be argued. And Brian, if you want to say something, Biden is flooding the country with the objective is to bring in 100 million migrants. They're not being given the vax. They're going to multiply like rabbits while the white population, the American population, is being vaxed and turned sterile. So you're going to have it's already occurring, a diminishing birth rate among the American citizens. And, of course, they're going to proliferate. They're going to be in abundance, not being vaxxed. How can you possibly argue there's no difference just on that issue alone, Brian?
I can, because where's Trump now? What happened? They script all this, okay? They know everything that's going to happen. They,
Brian,
you know,
give,
to keep
give
you
me
sucked
a,
into
Brian,
this.
Brian, Brian, I don't mind you having a different point of view, but when I give you a decisive argument, you can't just flip it off and say, oh, that's just imaginary. It's real. It's real.
Well, we live in illusion. Everything is illusion. Time
Brian,
is illusion. Our leaders
Brian,
are illusion.
Don't pull that. Don't pull that nonsense
on me. Well, it's
the
truth.
You understand you understand as a philosopher, I deal with the issue of reality and illusion. That's what I do, my stock in trade. I dissect arguments. That's what I'm doing here. I'm giving you evidence, in this case, evidence that suggests you're just wildly wrong to think there's no difference between the parties. There are major important differences, especially when you look at what Trump did to the Republican Party. He's got his flaws. Would you just as soon have Joe Biden if you had your choice? Would you pick Joe Biden as just say he's equal on a par, flip of a coin, you don't care which, or Donald Trump as president? Which would you prefer, Brian?
Well, naturally, I would prefer Trump, but I know the end point. The end game is, in their mind, it doesn't matter, okay? Because they're going to get their way no matter what. That's just how they are.
And that end game being precisely what?
What we're in right now.
What is the end game for Donald Trump? What is the end game for Donald Trump?
The end game for Donald Trump was the fact that they knew they'd get him out of there and then get Biden in and get what they wanted. They just use things like that. It's just like George Carlin said, you know.
I'm talking about Donald Trump. You're saying Trump and Biden are just pawns on a chessboard. But that's not the same thing as saying Donald Trump represents the same position as Joe Biden. It seemed to me the differences are overwhelming, that they're, it's indefensible to claim that Trump and Biden have the same policies, which I see you as doing. I just don't get it.
No, I'm not sure. Their policies will appear different, but
Brian. Why do you say appear different? They are different. This is not a matter of appearance. Trump followed through. He put up a wall, for God's sake. You can go down and see the remnants of it. Biden basically tore it down. How could they be more different?
I just look at the end result, okay? What we have is the end result. It didn't matter what Trump did, because the end result is what they want, and they just steamroll over everything, and you end up with what they want. And what we have today is what they want, okay? It's a mess, and they want that.
And they, of course, is the Jewish cabal. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I go back to that interview, Otto Kahn, who was right up there with the Rothschilds. He was there with Jacob Schiff. In fact, he was one of the heads of Kuhn Loeb with Jacob Schiff. And when you read that interview, everything makes sense. And it's at Henry Macau. If you just go on there and put in the search engine Otto Kahn, that interview from 1923, I think it is, comes up. And he explains everything that's going on now. And I try and use things like that to see what's going on. And when you read that, you get a feeling for what they're doing.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for sharing.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Mitchell. I reiterate, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Chicago Brew tried to get on the other day. Brew, if you're out there, please do call in. I'd like to give you the opportunity to say your piece.
Yeah, he was on a job site yesterday.
Go ahead, Mitchell.
Yeah, Chicago Brew was on a job site yesterday, too, or the other day, I should say, on Monday. But, you know, yeah, there are major differences, I believe, between the political parties today. However, they are essentially joined at the hip by their base ideology of this federalism and the power of the central government in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I often point out that on my morning show, the Revolution in the Morning Show, I often point out that what happens is that
Mitchell, we got somebody joining us.
Yeah.
518 area code. Give us your first name.
Go ahead, 518.
And join the conversation.
Jim?
Yes.
Okay, I agree that there is a difference between Trump and Biden. But let's get the facts here straight. You said Trump built the wall. He didn't build the wall. There's a 1,500-mile gap in that wall. He went down and had his picture taken in Arizona when they built that thing up there. But they didn't build that wall. You know, his big thing during the campaign was to jail Hillary. He got in there. He didn't do anything with Hillary. He was going to get us out of the Middle East. They complained about how Biden did it. Trump had 4 years to do it. Trump said he was going to get along with Russia. I remember he had that meeting with Putin come out, and then the next day his handlers had him out there, and he said, well, I said, why would Russia do this? Why wouldn't they do this? You know, he was going to overturn Obamacare. And people tell me, well, you know, that was McCain's fault. McCain died in September and went to hell shortly thereafter. He had 2 months. He could have – John Kyle was going to be the senator out there in Arizona. He could have overturned Obamacare. He was going to have a vaccine commission. And then Bill Gates talked to him, and that went out the door. He was going to start a voter integrity commission. Now, I wish he had started that because he got screwed out of that last election. We know that. You know, he was going to fix the infrastructure. He didn't do that. None of the politicians care about our infrastructure. I don't know about your area, but all around here, there's potholes everywhere. Meanwhile, we're sending all this money over to Ukraine, which is getting ripped off. Some of it comes back, you know, surreptitiously, and some of it just goes to these other oligarchs or whatever over there. He was going to reinstate Glass-Steagall, you know what I mean, to keep the banks from getting out of line. He didn't do that. He was going to defund sanctuary cities. He didn't take care of that. You know, he was going to, you know, get along with Russia, as I said, and that wasn't the case. Jim, I love your work. You do great jobs. I'm a big fan. You know what I mean? But, you know, I just think Trump's overblown here. You know, people talk about Wilbur Ross and how, you know, these people lent him money years ago and they kept him, you know, around. You know what I mean? Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
You're making a spirited argument. So do you think there's... You'd be just as happy with Biden as you were with Trump? You think they're just...
No, not at all.
You're saying Trump has serious flaws. I don't disagree with that. I'm saying Trump has done a hell of a lot more good for America than Biden or any Democrat will ever do. It's incomplete.
I agree with you. But he still broke all these promises. He didn't do these things that he said he was going to do.
Hillary. I think Hillary is CIA. I think Hillary has a get-out-of-jail-free card. So I don't think
I'll tell you about that. You know, you remember Craig Livingstone? He worked for Bill Clinton when Bill was the president. They made Livingstone head of the security at the White House. He broke into the FBI files. You know, I mean, that's why Bill and Hillary, they're untouchable. They've got the dirt on 900 politicians. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's ludicrous what we see. You know, Jeffrey Epstein, where's the media today? Let's get Ghislaine Maxwell out here. Let's find out who these people were. There's two sets of rules here, Jim. You know that. One for the big guns and one for the rest of us. You know, it's disgusting the way Jeffrey Epstein, you know, I don't believe he's dead. You know, he might have died if he did die. Yeah. I don't think he committed suicide. He might be over in Tel Aviv right now having a drink. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I
agree with all that. I agree with all that. And I like your coming on to make such strong arguments. I appreciate this greatly. Did we get your name and your state? Because I'd be glad for you to call it again.
Sure. I'm Frank from New York.
Frank from New York. Very, very good, Frank.
I sent you, by the way, Jim, I sent you an email one time. You keep saying Chuck Schumer. It's shoe, like the shoe you put on your feet. It's Chuck Schumer. I know the word, the spelling looks kind of funny, but that's the way his name is pronounced. Okay, you always say Schumer.
I mispronounce names all the time, believe me. So
I don't know about that. I think you do a great job overall.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. And I like having criticism because I don't learn anything from people who agree with me, though I appreciate hearing their sentiments.
You and Paul go at it now and then, and, you know, various other people. And, you know, hey, Giuseppe loves you, Paul. You know, we all love you. Scorpio, you know, myself, and there's a lot of other listeners out here, too. You know, you're a breath of fresh air. You know, that article you opened up with by Seymour Hersh, that was great. You know, I'm surprised that really got out in the public. I mean, you know, it seems to me, that would kind of been squashed. But, you know, that guy is a super reporter. He's on the cutting edge, and I enjoy the work you do. I really do. But, you know, I just think that Trump, you remember when they brought him out the day after he had the meeting with Putin, and he was sitting there like a little kid at the desk, and he said, well, I said this, I should have said that. You know, I mean, him and Putin should just say, hey, we're going to get along. Screw the rest of you, you know. And I talked to friends. They think that we've got this big, powerful military. You know, we used to spend as much as the rest of the world. Now it's only 7 or 8 countries. But, you know, I tell people, look at the F-35 boondoggle. I mean, we invested a trillion and a half in that. And what do we got? Yeah. Nothing. You know, it's disgusting. You know, if you bought a new Cadillac and drove it around the block and you had a problem, what do you bring it back? They can say, well, we'll sell you a new one. But that's what the military industrial complex gets away with in this country. Right. It's disgusting what they get away with.
Frank, I love it. We're about out, but I want
Jim, I appreciate you.
I want you to call again. I'd love to hear from you again. I think you're terrific.
Oh, well, I'll give you a call every Monday, Wednesday, Friday from now on.
Wonderful,
Jim.
Frank.
I appreciate it. And I love it. Okay.
Thanks, Frank. All right.
Thank you. Okay.
See you all on Friday. Take care. Spend time with your family.
You too. You too. Mitchell does a great job, too. I love Mitchell, too.
Thank you, Frank. Wonderful.
Okay. You guys have a great day.
You got
some good work.
Frank Fox.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their